More of Lake Effect Now, I'm Bonnie North. Shangri-La, a fictionalized paradise on Earth where happiness is permanent and you're isolated from the world. Well, that's probably vastly different compared to the setting of a new web series, which is also called Shangri-La. Wisconsin natives Nick Summer and Drew Rosas co-created the episodic comedy project. It follows an ensemble cast of characters trying to make it in Hollywood while surviving on the streets of Los Angeles. Rosas and Summers joined Lake Effect's Audrey Nowakowski in the studio ahead of a screening tomorrow night at the Cooperage. Rosas starts by explaining how their own experience of going west after graduating from UWM's film school influenced the premise of this web series.
The concept really came, I think, from sort of the transplanting ourselves from the Midwest out to California and Los Angeles and being sort of thrown into the monster of the entertainment industry. And there's this fascinating phenomenon you run into out there. There's obviously a lot of transient people and people that end up kind of like living off the streets or in various forms of survival. And the one thing I didn't expect was that as I'd meet various people or come across them on our productions and journeys and such, we found a lot of people that were former industry people that had sort of came out to Los Angeles or grew up there or whatever reason, had a shot at the industry, and it didn't quite work out, or they're still trying to make it, and they had kind of like found themselves at the street level of Los Angeles. And I thought that was just so fascinating. I never really thought about that before, that you have this giant monster of a machine that's sort of chewing people up and spitting them back out.
And we looked in the mirror and we found ourselves in the exact same place. Right. And we thought, hey, let's make a story about our lives, you know, filmmakers trying to struggle to make it in Los Angeles or Milwaukee. We're both graduates from UW-Milwaukee, and I actually live back here now, but during this project, we were both out in L.A. trying to do a new thing, and so we came up with the series idea and just kind of grew from there.
What do you think of the idea that, you know, go west, my people, you know, to accomplish, especially in, it seems like, artistic fields? Everyone thinks, like, the West is the place to be, in L.A. or, you know, Hollywood in particular, of course. What were your concepts of it before you guys moved out there yourself? And then how do you view it differently after creating this project and just experiencing it for yourselves?
Yeah, there's definitely a mythology of Los Angeles and Hollywood that is this fascination for a lot of people, especially from around the world, around the country. You know, it attracts a lot of creative people that think, oh, that's where you got to be. In reality, in today's interconnected world, you can kind of do it from anywhere. The only thing that I think that city really offers you is access to people and companies that you might not have here. But you don't quite need that anymore to quite break out, in a sense. So there is this mythology there, and that was really what we kind of want to tap into with the show, is sort of take the mythology of Shangri-La, the original Tibetan utopia, and flip it on its head and say, okay, what about the myth of Hollywood and that mirage? Is that still exist, and sort of have a comedy that sort of poke fun at it and the absurdities that come along with that?
Right. And on that note, how about you guys just give us a brief overall picture of what Shangri-La is about?
Oh, sure. Yeah. Shangri-La is essentially following a group of lovable characters trying to make it in Hollywood while struggling on the streets of Los Angeles. That's just like the short pitch of it. So essentially we have characters playing actors. One of them is a Jewish pop star. There's a filmmaker who's also a manager, who's also a producer, who's also a writer. Basically, that character is similar to Drew and I's struggle, and so we kind of poke fun at him, and he's just always, they're all sort of scheming to find their way, and we compare it to sort of like a show like Girls, or even I bring up Friends, where they all kind of live in these nice apartments, and you're just, it's so unrealistic, which it's fine, and those shows are fantastic, but we wanted to get a little grittier and a little more realistic, and you know, have characters that live in cars or live in a garage or, you know, live off the land. Like my character, he used to be a small-time infomercial host, but he has these flashbacks to that character. And you jump forward about 1 year is where the series begins, and now he has a huge beard, really long hair. He builds a shack that overlooks the L.A. skyline, and he calls that his paradise, and he's living off the land. He'd consider himself a wilderness man who lives off the land, but his land is Los Angeles. And that's why our character sort of, you know, travels through and meets these curious individuals who are also finding themselves in the struggle. They're all trying to climb their way up, and he's kind of been there, and it wasn't his paradise of Shangri-La.
And you two created the premise of the show together. What made you think you were the right guy to be one of the characters?
Oh, convenience, probably.
Yeah.
Well, it's a couple of things. I mean, one is really, really helpful when you're writing a show with someone to put them as the lead actor, because then I can make him do anything because he helped write it. You know,
it's true. Yeah, we already know going into it. Yeah,
yeah. You know, if and Nick does all kinds of ridiculous stuff in this series. You know, from taking a shower in a cooler on top of a hilltop, or does his own stunts, like several jump and fly moves. But he used to be a skateboarder, so he's very good at the, you know, the rollout.
Yeah, there's another scene where I actually wash my face in the LA River, and for people in Los Angeles, realize how pretty disgusting and dirty that is. Can't really write that in because the way we shot it, it'd be impossible to fake it. And so I'm just like, all right, man, we're going for it. Like, we know I'm going to do it, so just let's plan it. And also, Drew and I have been working. We made several features together, and it's how we originally worked on a project where the original actor fell through, and he ended up casting me, and that's how we became really good friends. And I started helping even more with art department and stuff, and we've been making projects ever since. So it's just, it helps a lot when you have one character already in it, ready to go,
And that's a production advantage to working with a partner, but there's also a character element, I think, that really ties in the sense Nick and I have had many conversations about work, money, life, and sort of like, where do you align the balance of how much time you want to spend working your job versus how much time you want to spend living your life? And making films like this is really a passion project, and we're not making a ton of money on these. We're putting everything we have into them, all of our time and sweat. So there's this balance, and it is a conversation that we've had for many years about how many days do you want to, you know, give up to your 9-to-5 versus be an artist, a creative, or
all of them. I'll give up all my 9-to-5s.
Well, Nick has always had a policy. He likes to work the least amount possible in a given year just to survive. And so there is a certain element of frugality that comes into his lifestyle that taps into that character as well.
It has a premise of following just, quote, lovable losers. You know, make a show about nobodies. Do you think that audiences nowadays do want more content about people who are genuinely struggling?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean,
it's less escapist.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this show is really... you have people that are struggling at this one level, but in Los Angeles, everyone's climbing the same ladder in the industry. And you might get a big break and take one step up that ladder, but then you're just looking at the next rung. And you're still kind of, you have the same feeling, same sensibility. That story has been told a million times over. So we kind of wanted to find a vantage point that hadn't really been shown before. And that's why we said, hey, what if we were just at the bottom of the ladder looking up at everyone? And what would that story be?
Along with just practicality, production value, frugality. This is a real kind of process of DIY filmmaking. So can you touch upon that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, we obviously with today's technology and everything, it's so much easier to get things done and to make them happen. A lot of times Drew and I might be the only ones out shooting. Like it's another perk to me being one of the central characters is he might be running the audio and the camera gear himself, and Drew also shot the entire thing. It looks amazing. Like he has a nice camera. And obviously we're film students, so the composition usually works well, and I do a lot of art stuff. So, yeah, it gives us the ability at the independent level to make everything and actually make it look. That's like one of the things we've had during these screenings of our tour is afterwards people who show up who don't know us are surprised, and they're just like, wow, no, that looked like a real show. And we're like, yeah, it is a real show. But when you hear web series, you automatically think, oh, you know, I've seen things on the web, whatever, which is part of the reason we wanted to do the tour to begin with, is make it a big event, make it fun, and get people out to actually realize, hey, we're making beautiful-looking content that, you know, hopefully is also entertaining.
Yeah, we've arrived at this strange place in the independent film timeline where the technology has arrived at a very cheap level. The camera I used to shoot the entire show myself, you can get now for under $1,000, a couple lenses, and sound equipment. Everything's really, really affordable. So it's kind of the democratization of the technology and the filmmaking process, as well as the distribution platforms, which with the internet and streaming content, everything is sort of arriving at the same time at this new frontier. And so there's advantages to that so that anybody can go out and create with limited resources. You can just go make stuff. If you have a great idea and you have a little bit of technical skills, you can actually just go do it. At the same time, it's sort of, we're entering this realm where the viewership is just flooded, or the content on the web is completely flooded, and you're in this new struggle now where it's like you can have really great stuff, but you have to figure out a way to kind of swim above the rest and, you know, tread water and find your little niche. And so it allows for certain advantages, but also provides a new sort of hurdle to overcome.
Right. And you guys are approaching just getting the word out in a unique way with essentially a Midwest tour of a web series. Now, often we associate tours with musicians, shows, things like that. So what made you want to approach it in this way to get out and see people? You know, despite it being available on streaming services, you know, by definition, can be seen anywhere with anyone doing anything. So why did you want to harness this additional audience connection?
Yeah, there's something really disconnected about the web. You know, you are very connected, but you're not seeing that human interaction. And especially with a comedy, so much of the satisfaction of it is putting it on a big screen in a theater with people and blowing their minds and getting to witness that reaction, as well as just making that person-to-person contact. You know, the music scene is a good example, and what we're kind of trying to emulate that in this tour and say, hey, if we were an indie band going on tour, we could play this venue, we could do this one, but for us, it's a web series, and they're just independent theaters that we're crisscrossing the country with. And yeah, I don't know.
Well, we're also used to screening on the big screen. It's like you take this all this time with the feature films we've made. That's your goal, right? Is you take, you know, 2.5 years, and with this project, 4 years, because it's even more content. All this time, it's all this buildup, and then you get to have this one premiere, and then, which is fantastic. You get all this excited energy. You see your friends. You meet new people. And then with this one, we're like, okay, it's a web series, so it's going to go online. And then there's this disconnect, and we're just like a little disappointed where you don't get to have that event. And we just said, why not? Like, let's do it. It's, you know, 2 hours and 15 minutes. It's a long feature, and we do an intermission for our things. So it's even more time to mingle and meet people. And just like this fun build up to this event and excited energy. And I think, I guess the whole point is when you do that and you meet people, that's just such a better way to help try and spread your story, spread your project to other people, meeting them in person versus like, you should really like this online or on my Facebook page, and which is like ridiculous. There's a huge disconnect there. So I think it's always better to meet people in person, go out in public. And like Drew was saying, it's way more fun when you go out and you watch something in a theater on a big screen when you're dealing with a comedy.
We're trying every angle we can to sort of break through the noise.
Now, with one of the characters, Nikki Kaplow, played by you, Nick, there's a quote that he says, jobs are for people who want what they don't already have. So, you know, lots of these random tidbits of wisdom from your character and other characters in the series. I was wondering, do you guys have favorites that show up throughout this first season? And how much of it is just over exemplifying Nikki's mindset and where this character is in life? And how much is it you guys putting your little 2 cents in, having been here, moved out west to pursue the artist's dream, and then have this, you know, probably more down-to-earth view about it?
Yeah, I really do like the combination of having jokes intermixed with these deeper moments. And even the deeper moments, they might provide a certain bit of wisdom, but they're also funny in sort of the way that they're brought to the screen. And one of the characters that does that the best for us is the Mark Borchardt character, who sort of acts as Nikki Kaplow's guru, his guiding light in the streets of Los Angeles. And I don't know, he has a couple lines about, you know, the working man trades 20,000 days of servitude in exchange for their retirement. And to me, that is really, we just did the math on that. We said, hey, if you worked a 9-to-5 and you did this, and then you wanted, you know, this many years, you hit your retirement, how many days is that? Like, nobody really thinks about that. You sign the contract, you join the job, and you know, submit your application. But they don't tell you, like, okay, you know, if you really follow this through the end, that's going to be 20,000 days that you give to this company. And that's kind of fascinating and mind-blowing when you think about it. And you start to realize why someone might trade instead of giving those 20,000 days, take them back into their own life. You might live by less means, but at least you'll be in control of your own freedom.
Yeah, exactly. Like, basically, my character and, of course, the Borchardt character, the Nikki Kaplow character that I play, is a lot what Drew and I talk about. It's like, how are you spending your time? Like he mentioned and we talked about earlier, is like, is it the 9-to-5-er? Which, of course, everyone needs money to live. I get that. I understand. But at the same point, if you broke it down, like I said earlier, to a wilderness man who's living off the land, you know, they would just say, all right, let's figure out a way where I don't, like, my job is my life. I'm just living it day to day, which is sort of like the hippie mentality, right? Is like, you just, freedom is time. It's not necessarily money, and you can't buy that time back. So that's one of the things we find in my character. And then also all the characters are sort of a little self-reflexive on themselves. Everyone who acts in this is also one of our friends. And so we would have meetings, we'd have discussions, and we'd sort of cater their character to their lifestyle. So that's how the characters, when they improvise or whatever, come off a little bit more original.
Well, Drew and Nick, thank you both so much for coming in to talk about Shangri-La. I hope audiences here love it. It's well done and time well spent.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Nick Summer and Drew Rosas are the co-creators of the new comedy web series Shangri-La. They'll both be at the Cooperage tomorrow evening for a screening of the first season as part of their 2019 Midwest tour. On Monday evening, they'll be giving a live commentary along with a screening at No Studios. You can find out more about both screenings at wuwm.com.